Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So, I have questions about SSL NX 509 certificates, right?
Sure.
So, my understanding is SSL has recently made changes to where they've deprecated some of the, it's not the CU stuff, but some of the tags you could use have been deprecated. And you now have to roll a new public certificate every year. You can buy for 5 years, but you, and, right. This is stuff that I'm hearing on the side. So I want to get your input. And then X509, how, right? I think there's confusion how that integrates with an SSL cert and how the keys are intermingled. I've seen some interesting setups there. So question is, SSL cert changes good or bad, and X509 and how it integrates?
Hey folks, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs, and lately I've been working on actually building out Top End Devs. If you're interested, you can go to topenddevs.com/podcast, and you can actually hear a little bit more about my story, about why I'm doing what I'm doing with Top End Devs, why I changed it from devchat.tv to Top End Devs. But what I really want to get into is that I have decided that I'm going to build the platform that I always wished I had with devchat.tv. And I renamed it to Top End Devs because I want to give you the resources that are going to help you to build the career that you want, right? So whether you want to be an influencer in tech, whether you want to go and just max out your salary and then go live a lifestyle with your family, your friends, or just traveling the world or whatever, I want to give you the resources that are going to help you do that. We're going to have career and leadership resources in there, and we're going to be giving you content on a regular basis to help you level up and max out your career. So go check it out at topenddevs.com. If you sign up before my birthday, that's December 14th. If you sign up before my birthday, you can get 50% off the lifetime of your subscription. Once again, that's topenddevs.com.
Not a topic I specialize in, so gotcha. I wouldn't be able to answer that. In fact, that's the first time I hear about the changes to SSL certificates and X509s.
Okay, well then I will see if I can find a link, and we'll add to the show notes, right? Yep. Because you learn something new every day.
Oh yeah, things change all the time.
Yeah,
things change all the time. I was saying earlier on how I was trying to get Pulumi to work with Keyvolt, and how I spent a good 8 hours trying to get it to work. Obviously, I'm not that clever, but assuming that I have the intelligence of the average person out there, I'm not a genius. I never claimed that, but man, it was hard. All I wanted to do was just to offload my secrets into a third-party service like Keyvolt, right? Well, I didn't want my deployment code for my infrastructure as code to include any secrets. That's another attack vector, right? Not just code. And now that infrastructure is code, then that's another place where secrets tend to live. And as I try to promote best practices, I'm like, you know what? Let's update the Pulumi stuff to use Azure Native. And I got stumped. Like, it was so hard. to do it. If somebody has done it and they're listening to the show right now, please reach out. I did have to, like, I've poked around and spoke to people. So I think I have a solution that I can work with. But things that work very easily with other infrastructure as code tools, they didn't. So imagine as a company, you're like, hey, we have some really good comments about X tool. And you bring the experience from previous similar tools, and suddenly, you know, the security is hard. Obviously, I don't want to isolate Pulum because there are other tools out there that give you a lot of challenges. And as things change, sometimes there are scenarios that people don't realize that they need to be covered. But for me, I was like, man, that was challenging. So that's am I going to give up, or am I going to persist there for the weekend to find the solution? That's the
answer. Well, I think as a developer, you kind of don't have an option, right? In most cases, you have to persist until you figure it out. Whether the solution is an ideal solution or not, right? I did find a couple of links. So the maximum SSL certificate validity has been reduced to 1 year.
Good.
As of 2021, something. So it's actually been for a little while, but we're just run up against it, right? And it says, you know, longer validity periods lead to possible issues with security, and with requiring it every year, you have enhanced identity authentication. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and it doesn't make things easier on us, but it definitely forces things to be more secure, at least in certain contexts. Correct. Which I think is good. But you talk about Pulum.
Changes like this.
Go ahead.
Changes like this would need to come with the appropriate tools to allow you to automate the process. So they might say, hey, we made the shelf life of these certificates much shorter, but this is the command that you need to use. Maybe you can automate the rolling of the keys by running this script. And this is what we lack as an industry. We make things harder or we lock down security, but then we let you leave you with guessing what is the best way to solve the problems. And there are some companies that do a fantastic job in saying, we change this for X reason to make security harder. Sorry, make security better. But these are all the things or the steps that you need to follow to now adapt your processes to abide to this one. These are the scripts. This is the code. These are the code samples that we do. I like it. I mean, secrets and like we'll talk about service principles. We had a very lengthy discussion the other day what service principles are. Azure Active Directory's service accounts that can run things for you as an automation account. They're usually non-interactive. So you issue a username and a password in effect and you store it somewhere and runs tasks for you in the cloud or otherwise. The challenge there is that these are credentials that people may have access to, and they need to be rolled. They need to be short-lived. Again, we are forcing much shorter defaults for these accounts. In the past, it was a year. Now we're making it 6 months out of the box. And it can be customized as well. People and certificates are the same. You need to have a process where these things are rolled frequently. The fact that now only for 1 year, it's great. But you know, people were afraid to change things because they were afraid that things would break. So this is where testing comes in, where you go through the process of changing the keys or updating all your NuGet packages and see what happens. I've done this in the past. God, that was like, I remember working on a large project and we had, you know, a lot of NuGet packages and they were all out of date, but nobody wanted to touch them. So I took it upon me to update all the NuGet packages and lo and behold, I broke the source code. I broke the code base. I had to spend days to try to fix things. But again, NuGet packages and dependencies are a security issue. So you need to keep them up to date as well.
It's interesting. We had our own private NPM server, right? Which a lot of people do, right? Because you don't want to put it out in public. So you have your own, and there are security implications there. Mm-hmm. We recently got rid of that server and I moved our NPM packages into Azure DevOps, right?
Nice.
Which works, and I got it to work, right? It took me a day or so to get everything set up and to get the NPMRC stuff done, the tokens working, everything. Got it all working.
Yep.
But now that I've done that, I'm the subject matter expert. So anytime anyone pulls down the new code that's pointing to the new NPM, and even though I've got it documented, they're like, Caleb, this isn't working for me, right? I found out that on Mac, right? It's not the same process. You can't do some of the same VSTS stuff. So I had to give them a separate link. And then someone's like, well, so-and-so set up a token for me in Azure DevOps. And I thought that would work. And I was like, nope, two different things. You know, one, you've got repo access. This one is specifically for NPM feed, right? Mm-hmm. So some of this is education. And, you know, it's good to have a subject matter expert as long as they're available to help when you actually need it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess the challenge and packages and dependencies are a big thing these days because, again, I was saying how Travis CI and NPM got hijacked due to that OAuth token. So how do you trust NuGet packages, right? That they become a whole thing now that you have to vet before you onboard into your code base. And that slows things down. But again, there's a compromise between security and speed. Like you want to move fast as a developer, but at the same time, you don't want to break or bring new holes, new security holes into your code base. So something that we used to do in the past was to use a sandbox to test new packages. Hey, I want to use this new feature. There's a package out there. I can download it. And then we would go through a submission process where the security team would go and look at the open source code, make sure that everything is fine, and then onboard it to the private repo like you did, where we could pull it for our code base and make sure that things were secure. So developers need and want to move fast. We need to give them the tools to do things. I remember I was working with a cloud customer and they said, their security team came to me and said after the meeting, hey, how can we lock down the Azure portal? So I was like, lock down the Azure portal? Yeah, we only want to give them access to like five resources that we approve. Web apps, functions, SQL Server, and storage. I can't remember what the other one was. Like, oh, I mean, that makes sense from a security perspective, but what if a developer wants to use this new service that we just released and it's super awesome because you can do X? How are they going to find out about that? If they can't find it in the portal or if they can't discover it, or they can't use it as on a trial basis, then how are you going to allow innovation in your code base? And they're like, yeah, we don't like that. We want the developers to only use the tools that we approve. And I was like, yeah, I can see your point of view, but at the same time, you can really hamper innovation in your company if you do that. So it's weird how developers want to do things and I want to move fast. Like I want to build things. I want to see them running. I want to see my console printing out this awesome stuff that I pull from somewhere. Like, yeah, it's working. But at the same time, what we do is we make things work and then we fix them. Like security and performance tend to be afterthoughts. But this is bad because if you do that, then your manager will say, oh, you got it working? Right, check it in, move on to the next task. And they're like, no, I need to spend some time fixing it. It's like, we don't have time, right? We don't have the resources, we don't have the money, you need to move to the next thing. And now you're building technical debt, both from the code base quality and from a security perspective. And I've been in teams and organizations that used to have this kind of standards, and it's hard. It's hard to go against the flow.
So how prevalent are things like backdoors? You know, can I go back to my favorite 80s movie, War Games? You know, would you like to play a game?
Uh-huh. So, do you mean like...
The developer throws a secret login into the app that bypassed the identity thing and whatever, so that they can get in without any problems.
Super admin, right? Yeah.
Super admin, yeah. It's not that hard. Like, assuming that a developer has the ability to maybe create accounts in the identity system.
Yeah, it's not hard to do.
Let's say Azure Active Directory.
But I mean...
Right? Yeah, it's not hard to do. So creating backdoors is not hard. Like creating super user accounts is not the problem. But once you start adding the appropriate tools, like let's say conditional access, maybe you only want to allow people to access this app from specific resources, maybe inside the VPN, or maybe from only specific IP addresses, or maybe only from a jump box on Azure that can only do certain things with specific accounts. So suddenly you're seeing that it's not just the account that is in place, but also how can they access resources? And then can also have risk-based access where you say, or risk-based conditional access where not only do you control access, but if you see something that is malicious, like somebody is trying to log in as me from Germany. Now, my work knows that 99.9% I'm either logging from my home or from office, or maybe from a coffee shop in the proximity. Maybe if I am traveling, it will be somewhere in the US. What happens is when that conditional access kicks in, you get either challenged for MFA or you get challenged for a certificate or, you know, Windows Hello, just to prove that you are who you say you are. And there are also things inside our infrastructure that will prompt for additional login. So if I try to access to my HR data, like I want to see my salary the last time, I will be prompted again for a login. So if I leave my laptop open and somebody goes, oh, Christos is logged in, let's go and check his salary. And, you know, people leave open desktops at the office all the time.
But how
your machines.
Should companies be for malicious internal developers? Where if I'm writing the code,
more than external,
you know, I could write something that says, you know, if I log in using this password, something super secret, then it just ignores all the other security protocols that are in the system and lets me do whatever I want.
So if you are using an identity service, that application will never see your password. They might see your username, right? Because that's something. But the login happens outside the application and the application only gets a token back. Therefore, everything that happened with that username and password, it's in a totally different domain to what your application is doing. The application knows that you're either authenticated or you haven't authenticated. But injecting malicious code, it's not hard. And if your company doesn't do pull requests or code reviews frequently to see what the changes are, then that's going to be something that developers can push easily. Does your company do audits and reviews? Do they do pen testing on the apps? Do they allow people to come in and do periodic audits on your code? That's another thing. Like, I remember working for a company that had an internal pen testing team, or sometimes they would use people from the same team that wrote the software to do the pen testing or do the security test. You can't. You're biased. You know all the things that happen in your application, and you also have a very specific way about how the application needs to be used. And then suddenly you get some random user that has never seen the app, and they will try to break it in so many different ways because they don't know how this thing works. And that's the whole point of getting a third-party auditor to come in and check your things, whether that's a pen test or somebody to come and look at your data or whatever they need to look at. So developers can, and they will probably will, especially if they're underpaid, if they're disgruntled, if they don't like what they're doing and they want to, I don't know. There's a lot of malicious things that can happen out there. You need to capture them as early as possible.
So I'm here with JD from Raygun. JD, we've been talking quite a bit lately about Core Web Vitals and keeping track of the performance of your applications. And one of the hard things is that you kind of get this aggregated data from Google that changes over time, but it's got this lag on it. And I think we actually had some folks from Raygun where we were talking about, in particular, this problem and having some way of getting faster feedback on this kind of a thing.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Google's official guidance is that you should be looking for a RUM tool and not relying on snapshotted data. So Raygun's RUM tool will collect all your Core Web Vitals. And last time I checked, I think we were at about 4 to 5 seconds lag on ingesting data. So pretty close to real time on how you're performing there. But yeah, we have first-class support in our real user monitoring product.
Yeah, real user monitoring means that each request that comes in, each track that people follow, that's what gets tracked. And so you know your numbers right away.
Yeah, that's right. Actual data from actual users, it's so much more valuable than synthetic data. And you also collect it across the entire user base. So you can see, like, who are my 1%, you know, most disenfranchised users who experience the worst sort of performance? And, you know, between us, Chuck, I'm stoked that Google's doing this because as a user of software, I want my software to go fast. And I'm really glad they're creating a business incentive for all of us to work on the performance of our software.
Yep, absolutely. So folks, if you want a real user monitoring tool that'll keep you on top of your Core Web Vitals, go check out raygun.com and you can actually just sign up for a free trial.
There's another issue, and I think it's much more common these days, is a developer only staying in a job for 1 to 2 years. And maybe over the course of a 3 to 5 year period, your whole development team rolls over, right? Or it's a whole new team.
Yep.
And you have 1 million lines of code and 30 apps. And no one knows everything. And there's a lot of gaps there. A lot of institutional knowledge goes away, right?
Yep.
And you have to start over. How do you handle that? Or do you just roll it up as part of technical debt and something that you just have to deal with as a company?
Well, yeah, that's a big challenge. And I've been in fact, once in a contract where the whole development team walked away. And then they hired 11 contractors to fill in the gaps.
Mm.
It was a weird setup. I don't think I've ever experienced that before. And they also had this massive dependency on consultants to come in and build the in-house system that they were building. And they had to pay a lot of money to keep that talent there. And that was a fantastic team I worked with. But imagine having 11 brand new people joining almost like within a month, trying to revive and build the system that the previous people were trying to build. It took us a while to get to grasp with the operation because we didn't know the business, right? We didn't know what they were trying to build. And then we had to understand the stack. And then we ended up rewriting quite a bit. Now, if you have a company that has mature software that's been running for a while, and then you just need people to add features here and there, I think that if you get senior enough people that they can understand code bases and do them, you know, add new features, it shouldn't be a major problem. As long as the code base has good principles, like they have good unit testing. And I've been in companies that had mature software because it was so mature, there was no testing. Like, hey, go and add a button here. That was my first day of the job. I was like, I can go and add a button? Hell yes. And then I realized that the buttons were created as part of a script that was running on the page. So there was no HTML on the page. It was an ASP.NET, like web forms app. But everything was pushed through. So there was JavaScript that was injected in the empty ASPX pages or ASP. Yeah, was it ASPX pages? Yep. It's been a while. So there was JavaScript that was injected into pages at runtime, and then that JavaScript would do queries to the API to pull the elements in. So they were not even using JavaScript to build the elements. They had things sitting in a database somewhere, right? Uh-huh. The button lived in the database, that definition, and then there was an API that would pull that information, and the JavaScript will pull that information, and then eventually will appear on the page. So that add a button took me 3 days because I was like, how the hell do I get the data here? So I had to reverse engineer that. And then when I eventually got it to work, it was literally testing something, changing something, testing the code, run the code, change it, run again. Mm-hmm. There were no unit tests. There was no unit tests in the API. There were no unit tests in the database. There were no unit tests or integration tests anywhere in the app. So the only way to build it was to trial and error to get it right. And it was just insane. Like, there was so much churn in that job, and there were so many other things that would go wrong. But imagine, like, you as a developer, go and add a button. Like, yeah, I mean, I know ASP.NET, or I know PHP, I know SPA frameworks, Angular, I know where buttons go. And suddenly you see this abomination that was built over 5 years. Like, who thought about that? Obviously, somebody said, we don't want to tie the UI to, you know, to the back end. We want to drive everything from the data at one central location. It has to be a database. So the thinking was right, but the implementation was awful. And that made everybody's life a living hell. That was a system that we had to maintain, and we couldn't change, right? So
I interviewed for a job that had a similar issue. They had no front-end developers, no experience there, but they had really strong SQL guys. And so all of the HTML existed in PSQL. And I was interviewing for a front-end position. They're like, yeah, man, we really need a strong front-end guy. We're thinking about moving to Angular. We want to do this and that. And so I'm asking questions, right? They're like, yeah, right now everything's fed from the database. I'm like, so what is everything? They're like, oh, the HTML, the styling, everything. And I'm like,
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Really? Okay. I was like, that's all I need to know. No, thank you.
Thank you very much. Of course, it was nice meeting you. I mean, at some point, you start asking all these, because you build the experience, right? So towards the end of my consulting days, just before I joined Microsoft, these were the things that I would ask, like, what is your CI/CD process? How often do you push to production? How easy it is to put to production? How much unit testing do you do? What's your test coverage? What frameworks do you use? So there are these things that you learn from experience, from painful experience. Suddenly, you're like, you know what? I don't want to maintain the system. Thank you very much, but I don't want to work with you. Or you might say, I love this. I want to work for you because you have such good practices. There are loads of things that have been built over the years that are maintained with duct tape and strings behind the scenes, and people have to maintain them. So you can see how security can be a secondary thing when you try to put a button somewhere and it takes 5 API calls, right?
Right.
So why aren't things secure by default? You know, when you build something, You know, why did they let you make it insecure so easily?
Because every application is a snowflake. I mean, I get it. When you create something from scratch, when you try to, let's say, ASP.NET new, right? .NET new, ASP.NET web app, make it happen. It is insecure by default because we don't know whether you need to use authentication, whether it's something that eventually will happen. If you know upfront, easy peasy. There's a flag over there to make it happen for you and it will be locked down. But most developers start very organically. Like, I need to test this thing out. You build a POC and then somebody says, oh yeah, that's working now. Let's add this, let's add this. And eventually you build this massive thing that runs critical parts of your business. I would say I would love for things to be locked down by default. If you're deploying something new out of the box, then it should come with the appropriate security settings. I think .NET has done a fantastic job in adding default HTTPS, right? So if you're creating a new web app today, .NET Core 3, all the way to 7 now, HTTPS, HSTS are on by default. There's already an app that authorized just to make sure that you have authorization there. We have cores settings. I mean, cores, God, I've been caught by cores so many times.
Mm-hmm.
Cross-origin resource security, right?
Very.
And that was something that could bite you in the butt if you didn't know what you mm-hmm. were doing. But early days of cores in ASP.NET were like a nightmare to set up. These days, so easy. Like we know what needs to happen and we made it easier. So certain parts of the application are secure by default, certain parts are not. And we can't be super opinionated about how you do security, right? So let's say we don't want you to store any security settings in your settings.json file for ASP.NET. We're going to use Key Vault. Now, suddenly everybody goes, wait a minute, Microsoft is pushing Key Vault, right? They want us to use Key Vault. They want us to use Azure. We don't like this. So you get all these. I mean, I would love for everyone to use Key Vault for the settings, but maybe you want to use HashiCorp, or maybe you want to use something else that HashiCorp's Key Vault or some other solution out there. So we can be opinionated to the point that we don't really upset the masses, because once you start pushing things down, I don't want to get into the identity server kind of thing, but that was a big ingestion point at some maybe a year ago when identity server went private, and then everybody was like, why is not Microsoft offering a similar thing? But we do offer a similar thing. It's called Azure Active Directory. And everybody was like, yeah, but Azure Active Directory runs on the cloud. We need to run on-prem. And like, well, if you need to run on-prem, there's still paid for versions out there and solutions. And technically, you are paying for Azure Active Directory. You're just indirectly getting Active Directory because you have either Azure or Microsoft 365, and most companies out there do that. So it's weird. Like, how do you make sure that things are secure without being opinionated about the tooling that makes everything secure? HTTPS, it's ubiquitous, right? Everybody uses HTTPS. You can get your certificates from wherever you want. We just say, hey, if you're developing, use the developer certificates that make your life easier. But in production, we can't support you. You're on your own. Go and get it. We're not saying, go and get the Azure App Service certificates. But if you want to, we have it there for you. So there's a balance between being opinionated about the security tools that you need to use and how you can lock things down by default without upsetting people.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting conversation to have.
So you mentioned HSTS. You know, how important do you think that is for everybody to move to? I know a lot of people don't know about it. So first, you know, let our listeners know what HSTS is and then why they should be using it.
I think it goes hand in hand with HTTPS, right? So it is a protocol to protect your resources and say for how long this should be protected for and cast. And again, with cores, if you're using APIs, there are tools out there that should be enabled by default. I would say the fact that we have them as default these days, it's great. We also did a lot of work with ASP.NET to remove a lot of unnecessary headers that were emitted as part of the responses that we're sending back. So that also adds extra protection. And if I remember correctly, HSTS settings were configurable in .NET, so you could actually change the default ones.
But you have to register your domain for HSTS because what it does is it makes sure that every communication to that domain is via SSL. Even that initial check DNS or whatever to request is via SSL.
Correct. So it says only over HTTPS strict transport security protocol, right? So that's for everything to happen. And then you can change the how long, what age, and you need to include subdomains or what have you. And it's super easy in ASP.NET Core, of course. It's included there out of the box.
Okay. So I think we're getting towards the end of things, but is there any last minute things that you want to let us know that you've seen that people just like should do to make sure that they're secure? And
let's summarize what we talked about today. We talked about secrets. We want to eliminate secrets. So these days, my motto is secretless apps, secretless code. If you can eliminate your secrets, you're eliminating a large part of the attack vectors because you're making people's life harder. You're going back to the defaults. Like, people don't try to hack frameworks anymore. They don't try to hack operating systems. They try to find the easy way in. So let's remove the easy way in and get people to, like, bad people, to try to find the hard way in. And we made it a lot harder for them, whether it's the operating system, whether it's the browser, whether it's the framework. We have thousands of engineers, hundreds of thousands of eyes looking at open source tools out there that are used by ordinary developers so that we don't have to worry about these things. If I am using a framework, then I have confidence in the framework because it's built by someone reputable, whether it's Google, whether it's Facebook, like React Native, React. You know, these are big frameworks out there that have had a lot of engineers looking at them. Let's not reinvent the wheel. I don't want people to building their own solutions. And if they can't find something, please reach out to the community to help you out because, as I said before, it's very unlikely that we're trying to solve a problem, a new problem. It's already been solved somewhere by someone, probably more clever than me and you. But in many cases, that goes also to say that just because it's out there doesn't mean that you should trust it. So whether you find something in a blog, Stack Overflow, even sometimes official documentation, question whether that's the right solution or not, because we don't always have the best things out there on the web. I remember a long time ago, I was looking at password reset in ASP.NET, and it was this weird blog that was coming always at the top. I think Troy Hunt talked about it as well, where it was littered with bad practices. And there were comments there that would say, like, please take the blog down or rewrite it with all this best advice. And this guy didn't budge. So just because it's out there doesn't mean that you should use it. Same for packages. Dependencies that you bring into your code, they should be vetted. You should make sure that they're the latest and updated so you don't have any CVEs that can be used to hack your solution. And, you know, we didn't touch things like containers and Kubernetes that also bring another element of, you know, running somebody else's container without having vetted it properly. That's another dependency in your application. And we also talked about security by default. It's hard because we don't really know what you want to build before. Yeah, I mean, sometimes you don't even know what you want to build. You just have an idea and then you start putting things together. So security comes as a secondary thing, but it should be a priority for developers, teams, and enterprises. Because as you said, security is not a thing until it is a thing, and then that's too late. If security becomes a thing for your organization, you probably have had an attack somewhere or data compromised, and we don't want to do that. And yep. The easiest way to address these things is by using off-the-shelf tooling, third-party services that, you know, have been vetted by your teams and you know that they can do the job for you, whether it's an identity service, a storage service, a SQL server, whatever. Just use the right tools.
What are some good places to go to learn how to make things secure?
There's tons of resources out there. I would start with OWASP because if you're building web apps these days, then the OWASP framework is pretty good. Sometimes it comes with recommendations about how to address these issues in your specific framework or language. And sometimes they will also provide you with recommendations. Starting to think as a hacker is also a very good practice. Like starting to think of how attackers think and getting that mindset is also very useful. There are some fantastic open source and free capture the flag websites out there that you can learn about how attackers try to get access. And that also makes you very mindful. Like, you know what? I use this. Like the other day we're doing one at Microsoft, where we got access to one of the servers and we were able to run history on the command line and we found a service principal login in the history. So I use that as well. In my PowerShell, I have PowerLine, which retains the history of my commands. And because I always sign into to Azure with service principals all the time since I do demos, it's scary that my history is always there. So I have to clear out my history explicitly so it doesn't come up when I do a demo or when I live stream. Because this is how, you know, people get access to certain stuff. Like, I totally didn't know about history until I did the capture the flag. And then I was like, oh my God, for the last 15 years, I never thought about clearing out my cache in my command line. Now I'm so conscious about it. So you don't know what you don't know until you know it. doing these kind of fun games and activities and getting to learn and study about security, whether you're from defensive or offensive side of things, it's very useful getting into that mindset. And of course, you know, you can reach out to me, you can reach out to other security experts in the industry. We have a Discord server where people can jump in and ask questions about cloud security and identity. And yeah, find your niche and reach out to the right people to get some support.
What's the name of that Discord server? So people want to find it?
Oof. It's the Fortify show.
Okay.
The Redmond show.
Okay.
Fortify.
Great. And if they want to reach out to you, what's the best way to do that?
Twitter is the best place to find me. My wife complains about spending too much time on Twitter, but it's a great community. It's a great place to be. I know that Twitter gets a lot of bad rap, and as with every other tool, it can be used and abused. But I use it predominantly as a tool for communicating with the community and helping people out. So if you have any questions, reach out. We also do open hours or office hours, and you can find me on Linktree where you can even book a one-to-one with me if you have like serious questions and want to find out. Hopefully we'll provide the links later.
Yep, we'll do that.
Hi, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs. And lately I've been coaching some people on starting some podcasts and in some cases just taking their career to the next level. You know, whether you're beginner going to intermediate going to advanced, whether you're trying to get noticed in the community or go freelance, I've been helping these folks figure out how to get in front of people, how to build relationships and how to build their careers and max out and just go to the next level. So if you're interested in talking to me and having me help you go to the next level, go to topendevs.com/coaching. I will give you a 1-hour free session where we can figure out what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go, and figure out what the next steps are. And then from there, we can figure out how to get you to the place you want to go. So once again, that's topendevs.com/coaching.
All right, let's move on to picks. Awesome. I'm going to go first today. And you're talking about secrets, reminding me of an old movie. And I looked it up and it was 1992 with Robert Redford. It's a movie called Sneakers. I don't know if you remember that, but what prompted me is when you talk about secrets, I went, there's something about that in a movie. And I remember I looked it up. It's like, yep. The name of the company that they had it was called C-Tech Astronomy. And that's an anagram of Too Many Secrets. So if you want to catch an old movie that's really good, talking about security and
Robert Redford, yep, right?
Robert Redford. It's got Sidney Poitier. Yep. It's got Ben Kingsley, Dan Aykroyd, a lot of people in it. So it's a really good movie. It's kind of old, but it's still a really good one. And then I'm actually going to do another pick today. And that is that the official trailer for Stranger Things 4 has came out. So it looks like season 4 is going to be pretty good. All right, Caleb.
They said it's all over the place and all over the world. And it's going to be super fun. It's the biggest thing that I've ever done in Stranger Things. So highly recommend it.
I'm trying to remember, is this going to be the last season? I remember only 4 seasons, I think, right? I think is what they said.
Don't ruin it for us. You get us excited about
that's public information.
That's the last one.
An insider. You know, I was disappointed that Lost in Space was only going to have 3 seasons. It's like,
I know,
but I think they're going to be there'll be a spinoff, I hope, of Lost in Space.
Oh yeah, like Batman, right? I don't know if you watched the latest Batman, but how many reboots have we had so far? Me and my wife were talking today about how many Batmans there've been in our lifetime, and we're talking about which one was the best. A lot. Can we get into that space? Can we say which one was the best? Or can we choose?
Be another Indiana Jones.
Or like alienate half of the audience.
Another Indiana Jones coming. So, you know, it never stops.
There is? Yeah. What? Man. I remember, did the first one come out before or after we're born? I think it was after we're born, like in the 80s, right?
I think so. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But still a long time ago.
It is. It's like being old enough to see things being in reboot like 2 or 3 times, which is good. Is it Harrison Ford for Indiana Jones?
He's going to be in it. Yep.
Wow. Okay.
All right. So, Caleb, what's your pick?
I'm going to make it easy on myself this week and just pick Disney World. Whether you like Disney or not, whether you like Florida or not, any of that, your 6-year-old will love it. So, there you go. Disney World.
All right.
Nice.
Christos.
And we're allowed one pick. Always.
You're the guest. You can get as many as you want.
Yeah.
How much time do we have? I would say my first pick is Slow Horses. I'm watching Slow Horses these days. It's a fantastic TV show on Apple TV.
Yeah, okay.
And it has Gary Oldman. So anything with Gary Oldman is good.
Yeah.
It's a show about MI5 spies and what have you. So if you like spy things, then highly recommend it. It's the British version of whatever the US version can be with CIA. And the second one is the Moon Knight, Marvel, the new TV series. I don't know if you had a chance to catch it.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing. It's a bit confusing. Like, the last episode dropped a few things and we were like, what the? Me and my wife were watching it last night and they're like, we're utterly confused right now. Like, I don't know what is here and what is not, but it's very well written. I'm really enjoying the last spin-offs of Marvel and making these like series instead of being a movie, right? Because it's a movie,
the TV
it's a 1 hour, an hour and a half, 2 hours, and it's done. And you're done. At least now there's a bit of continuity. Yeah. So kudos to Marvel and Disney for doing
that. Yeah, my wife and I really watched the first show and I liked it. I thought it was pretty interesting, but it was too much for her, too, out there with the weird monsters and stuff and in his condition, whatever, is just didn't sit for with her, so she didn't do it. But
yes. Don't want to give out too much, but I think I saw Ethan Hawke saying that I think Blade is making an appearance in Moon Knight, because he was asked by in one of the night shows, and they were like, is the Hulk making an appearance? Like, no. And then they were asking all these different characters, and then they said, oh no, Blade is not making an appearance. I think they asked him if he's a vampire, if he's Dracula. Mm. He's like, yes, I am. So I don't know. I mean, I have to see it to the end. But
there is a new Blade coming out. At the end of Eternals, they show the Black Knight. I think it's the Black Knight. At they do the end things, and you can hear Blade talking in that little thing. So that's two new movies just off of a little bit at the end of Eternals that are coming out. They've got it lined up for like 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cash cow that's going to keep on giving. But at the same time, they're doing a fantastic job in creating, and like The Mandalorian. We love The Mandalorian. My girls love The Mandalorian.
I just got my wife a Grogu little stuffed toy for her birthday. So
you probably can't say it because it's like, you see my Grogu's back there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
They're a bit blurry, but we're a Mandalorian house.
My son got a porg at Disney that he says is an owl. So.
So talking about Blade and being old, I think I have Blade on Laserdisc.
Whoa.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. I have Blade on VCR cassette. No, I'm not.
You got it on a VHS? Can you play it anywhere? Because
there you go. Betamax. Yeah. HD DVD. Man, I was an HD DVD guy. And then Sony basically said, no, we're not going to lose again. And they just paid to make everybody use Blu-ray and HD DVD died. But that's a whole nother
story. Welcome to the second part of the show where we talk about being old and grumpy about all the technologies that they took from us. I miss my rotary phones, you know, the ones with the cable that you can take with you, these giant things that you never have the round things that you turn.
The 20-foot curly cord.
With the cord. Yeah,
it's not the same though. Like, you have to be tethered to that furniture that holds your phone, and everybody can hear the conversation in the house.
Yep. Hey, Dad, get off the phone. You knocked me off the internet. Why'd you do that? Right? Yeah.
I remember downloading my first MP3, which was something like 6 megabytes, and it took me 24 hours or something because people would interrupt the downloads and they had to start all over again. The download speeds were like 1.5 kilobits per second.
Napster. Yep.
Napster. Yep. Yeah. Those were the days.
I remember joining multiple 56K modems into one so that you could get double the speed.
Chaining them.
You used to be able to merge them, together so you could. You call two phone numbers with one with each, and it would give you double speed, and it would.
And you could you would join the packets out of the modems. Yeah. I remember going from 56 to 128, or was it like a 116? I can't remember the next one, 112.
Yeah,
with ISDN, and also the fact that you could get a split line that you could have your phone and your internet and in the same line without having to. Oh God, those were the days, man.
I feel sorry for our listeners. It lasted.
Youngsters will never.
I remember in college, I ran a BBS with a 1200 baud modem. So,
yeah. I had a friend that had a very good idea about making money on the internet back in the modem days. You know how when you download a picture, it just starts from the top and then it goes like line by line.
Right.
But imagine if you could start from the center and open up the picture, right? So instead of downloading from the top to the bottom, you go center and then expand. That will transform certain industries for sure, but he was too late into his idea. And then, you know, SDL came in and his dream was killed.
All right. Man. All right. I think we're going to call it there. I'm going to call it there. Okay. We'll have another sideshow behind the back in the green room. We can keep talking about this type of stuff. But for our listeners, if you like that, you want to touch out, get in touch with us, get in touch with me. I am on Twitter. I am at .NET Superhero.
Dun, 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 dun. And I'm at Caleb Wills Codes, I think.
All right. That's it, maybe.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And we'll catch everybody else on the next episode of Adventures in .NET.
Bye, y'all.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit cachefly.com to learn more.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you loving Adventures in .NET? Want to help us cover the costs of putting the podcast out every week? Well, all you have to do is go to adventuresin.net. That's .NET.com/premium. And you can sign up to give us $9 a month. And what that'll get you is it'll get you those ad-free episodes, which is a better way for us to pay for the podcast than putting the ads in. You'll also be able to support the show in joining a monthly call where we get on and we talk about what topics you want to hear about, what guests you want to hear from. And we will be able to dive into further ideas about how we can make the show better. And lastly, it's just a terrific way to support the show and let the hosts know that you appreciate them. So go to adventuresin.net, that's adventuresin.net, .NET.com/premium to sign up.